everyone. Thank you for finding time and visiting today's ISCA Health webinar. My name is Carole Ponchon, and I'm the Healthy Lifestyle for All e-learning project coordinator for ISCA, the International Sport and Culture Association. I am delighted and honored to be your host for today's episode. Our topic for this podcast is health enhancing physical activity for children and youth. Being active from an early age as a normal part of daily life can establish a positive pattern that can last a lifetime. This is not an opinion. It has been demonstrated by many studies. And yet, one in three children in the World Health Organization European region are living with overweight or obesity, and these rates are still steadily growing. So today, we will in particular ask ourselves how to best integrate HEPA and physical literacy in your backpack for early age education. Let's just dive into the topic. It's a privilege for me to be introducing our speaker for today as we travel to the United Kingdom. Andrew Daly-Smith is a reader in physical activity and healthy childhood and co-director for the Center for Applied Educational Research at the Faculty of Health Studies, the University of Bradford. He will be introducing an existing and successful practice, the Creating Active School. I cannot wait any longer to learn first-hand tips and tricks. So Andy, let me first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Are you ready to dive into our conversation about creating active school?
I certainly am, Carole, and really looking forward to it.
Thanks a lot. Let's maybe just start from the very beginning. Could you maybe start by bringing us all where it started? What were the challenges that your organization was facing or wanted to address at that time when you created the initiative?
So that's a really good question. So back in 2019, or actually even before that, a few people who I worked with in the Yorkshire region within the UK, we came together and realized two things. We ran lots of conferences for physical education leads in schools, and quite often the physical education leads would come back and say, while the conferences are great, if our senior leadership team, so our head teachers or principals, don't hear these messages, when we get back to schools, they have no impact, because senior leaders and principals direct what happens within primary or elementary schools. And the second thing was the recognition that in the UK at the time, there was no whole school physical activity framework. So while many people use the term whole school physical activity, when you talk to, even if it was just mixing up among researchers, everyone had a very differing view of what that meant and what it looked like. But then when you went across the different stakeholder groups and spoke to head teachers or public health specialists, again, everyone's view of what a whole school physical activity approach was very different. Some considerably different, others only slightly. And what that does is it creates a confusion in the system. So if you're trying to head towards a goal of every school being an active school, we need to have something to help guide that vision to ensure that everybody is heading in the same direction. What we were very clear about when we came together to design the framework, though, is that it is not a one solution fits every school. Every school looks different. Even if you go onto Google, and this is something I've done recently, to look at the bird's eye view of a number of different schools, even just looking at the physical environment, every school is incredibly different. So what a school can implement that literally might be 500 meters down the road from another school will vary based on the assets that they have within their school. So the framework that we developed had to enable it, it had to provide what should be done, but not how it should be done. And then that was really the beginning of the journey for the Creating Active Schools framework. In 2019, we had a conference where we had over 130 head teachers and school governors and some wider school stakeholders from public health, active schools, et cetera, come to listen to experts on day one. And then on day two, we co-developed the Active Schools framework. And you can, I won't go through that in great detail. It's just to say we use something called the UK Design Council Double Diamond Approach. There's a video that explains it and a paper that details every step that we went through. But what we ended up with was a framework which was developed by policy, research and practice. And that's enabled us since that day to work with lots of different stakeholder groupings. And it has what we call high face validity. So if I'm in a room with head teachers and I show them the framework, sometimes with schools, there is a sense that schools feel as though we do too, rather than work with. And actually, what it enables me to do as somebody leading that session is to say, well, this was designed by people like you. This had head teachers' voice at the front and center of how this framework was shaped. And that is a really powerful statement to be able to make, and it knocks down barriers. So that was back in 2019. And then since then, we've been working on, well, if we've got a framework, which is the what, how do we then create the how? So how do we use the framework to drive what we call an implementation model in science? But actually, it's just how do we design an effective physical activity whole school program based on what the framework was telling us needed to be addressed?
Wow. Thanks a lot for this very informative background and painting it for us. That's very vivid and lively. And just for our audience, we'll make sure to refer in on the podcast page to every resource that you are mentioning, so the framework and the videos as well. Can you actually walk us through this framework and how do you actually reach your vision of every child active? Who is working on the initiative? How does it look like? Tell us a bit about the journey and the solution you developed.
Okay, so that's a really big question. So what might be easiest if I start with the framework itself and how it works. So if there's people listening, it might be useful if you go onto the website and download a copy of the framework so you can look at what I'm talking about. But first of all, with the framework, it starts in the middle with the whole school practice and ethos, because what we know now is if we treat schools as an organization, we need to stop looking at the quick win solutions, which are at the bottom. And we need to start to look at higher systems level change within schools. So we need, in whole school practice and ethos, that drives the policy and vision of a school. So for example, if you're working with schools, ask them what their mission and vision statements are, because if physical activity or health is not integrated within that mission and vision statement, it means you are actually trying to work with a school where their alignment is focused on something else. And that doesn't mean that it needs to be in there explicitly. You know, not every school statement will say physically active, but it should talk about happy, healthy children or words to that regard. So the next stage in terms of policy is what policies are in the schools and how are they directing the behavior of the school? So, for example, we look at things like the teaching and learning policy, but we also focus on the school development plan. It might be looking at the physical environment policy around the school in terms of the development and sustainability of physical spaces within the school. Because those policies and what is written into those policies direct the behavior of the school on a day-to-day level and what they're trying to achieve year on year. So it's really important we create that higher level systems change. Sat within the policy and vision box are the physical and social environment. So we all know the physical environment that we live within directs our behavior. So for example, when your children walk into a classroom, what's one of the first things that they do? They go to their desk and they sit down. Well, have you ever questioned what would happen if you took the chairs away? A subtle change to the environment would have a huge impact on the behavior. Now, I'm not suggesting we should have schools where there are no chairs present. That's just to make a very simplistic example of how we can shift a physical environment quite quickly. But it's encouraging schools to think through all of their physical environments, their classrooms, their corridors, their school yards, their school's green space, the gymnasium, so on and so forth, and how those things are shaped to promote physical activity. So, for example, does your school have an outdoor classroom? Next is the social environment. So that social environment is the conversations that take place around the school about physical activity. So in the staff meetings, do we have a 5-minute update on what the latest physical activity progress has been with the children, young people, and even the staff themselves? But also, how do pupils and teachers talk about physical activity? If you have a pioneering teacher who takes their class into the playground to do an active maths lesson, How do the other teachers respond to that? Do they think that what that teacher is doing is incredible and they want to hear more? Or is it a conversation behind that teacher's back questioning why they have their children running around in a playground in a maths lesson? They can have an equal positive and negative effect. Operating within those two environments are our key stakeholders. So if you look across the framework, we have senior leaders and governors. We have teachers and wider school staff. We have pupils as playing a role in designing the whole school approach. We have parents, and then we have wider stakeholders. So each of those five groups should all have an invested role in supporting the school to deliver a whole school approach to physical activity. What we've seen from some of our early work is that teachers and wider school staff tend to be the first group that physical activity programs work with. And that makes common sense because they're at the forefront of the delivery. You know, they're in the most contact with pupils. But actually, to make it a more sustainable model, we need to look at the role of senior leaders, which is not around delivering physical activity, but actually upskilling senior leaders to understand how do you write policies to integrate physical activity within school daily practice. Another piece of work that we're doing with the World Health Organization is to help stakeholders who are beyond the school or education environment to understand how they can interact and engage with schools. Because quite often, if you have things like a public health team who sit within a local authority, they actually don't understand the education system. And it took me a long time to understand the education system, the language, the key drivers, what the performance indicators are. So we're looking to develop a training module to help those people who aren't based in education to understand what education's needs and wants are and the language we need to use. Finally, all of that comes together and it drives seven opportunities for physical activity. The closer to the center line, the more impactful it is on physical activity. So you'll notice academic lessons, non-PE, are the most beneficial opportunity for physical activity. And that's purely, it's down to a few things. One, it's the most inactive period of a child's day. We've got research that shows maths and English lessons, or maths and language, sorry, in an international context, are the most inactive period. Children are sat down to learn more often than not. It's also the longest period of time during a child's school day. You also have all of the children and they're under the control of a teacher. So actually, you put all of those things together, even if you introduce just 2 or 3 minutes of additional physical activity, that is a huge gain in public health terms. Working to the left, we have in-school opportunities, so physical education, break and lunch times, and then events and visits. And then working to the right, we have beyond school opportunities, so before and after school club, commuting to and from school, and then family and community time. So the opportunities to the right are things that the schools can influence, but they can't control. So they can put before and after school clubs on. They can have active travel policies. They can build bike sheds. They can have walking buses. But it's still the decision to engage in the behaviour still lies with the parent and the child rather than being under the school's direct influence. So at the moment, what we're seeing in Bradford in the work that we're doing is many schools are focusing on academic lessons and physical education as the two primary areas of focus. And then also commute to and from school seems to be quite a popular thing to investigate. Working into the higher levels of the CAS model is the work that we're sort of doing, trying to influence the system beyond the individual school. So that's looking at a good quality professional development with schools. So looking at once teachers have been trained and they're in the school environment, how can we support them around the adoption and implementation of whole school physical activity? So that's a really different skill set. And we're just doing some work at the moment in terms of trying to understand what training do those teachers and wider school staff need. But then we also need to start to influence initial teacher education as well, especially. There's a lot of work now starting to go on around physically active learning and integrating that within the teacher education years. But we have a huge, huge distance to go. There's lots of work across the European Union, but also some really good work coming out of Australia as well. But we're in the early stages of that. And we definitely need to improve the integration. Last but not least, are two things at the higher level of the model. The first first is an integrated behavior change framework. So you'll notice we've got capability, opportunity, and motivation. And that comes from Michie's COMBI model that was published in 2012. So I would recommend anybody, again, to go and read that paper. Really, really influential in terms of behavior change and understanding what are the components of behavior change that we need to focus on. And then finally, and this is sometimes the hardest part of the jigsaw, is getting alignment in government policy and guidance. So we've got education, we've got health and sport, are three of the main areas. And quite often, and this is unintended, quite often there is conflict between those three domains. So it's working with policymakers who are developing policies within those three different areas to help them understand by writing a policy in a particular way can have a negative impact on a policy in a different area. And also trying to draw those policymakers closer together to work in collaboration so we don't have conflicting messages going into school. So that was the framework. And I'll give you an opportunity to ask me a question there, and then we can talk about how we're developing some implementation off the back of that.
No, that's very impressive. And it leads me to one of the questions that I had, because as you say, it's a gigantic jigsaw with many different elements. And it can be hearing it like overwhelming for someone feeling like, okay, I need to address all of these elements, etc. So maybe while you will tell us a bit more about day-to-day implementation or maybe sharing one of the pilots, I think it will be interesting to tell us and picture who is working on this initiative. What did you bring on? You tell us at the beginning for the co-developments. But just to inspire us and tell us it's doable, I guess we need to picture out who is involved in fulfilling this prophecy, should I say, this framework, putting it into reality.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head, and it's a huge undertaking. The most important message is that schools should not try to do everything at once. It's about picking small bite-sized chunks, working on those, and ensuring that you are building sustainable behavior. The challenge that schools often face is the need for quick wins. And what we're trying to do through Creating Active Schools is to kick the quick wins into the distance and say, actually, we don't want you to change. It's not about changing your pupils' physical activity level tomorrow. We want to see a difference in 3-4 years. And we know if we're doing it over that sustained period of time that it's starting to embed into that whole school culture and ethos. So in terms of how we support our schools, we have an online profiling tool, which is in effect a professional development tool in its own right. And it's based on the four domains in the framework, which I haven't mentioned yet, but the framework has got what we call policy, environment, stakeholders, and opportunities. So there's a color version of the framework that you'll see the different boxes, and I can send this to you to upload. We get the schools to profile across those four areas, and there's 22 subdomains within those areas. So in effect, it's reflective practice. When we talk about creating change, we shouldn't just be adding things on top of what we already do. We should actually be trying to understand what we're already doing. So most sort of physical activity programs to date have quite often, rather than worked with schools to understand their current provision, have just dropped additional things on top. And what we know is, you know, there's some very common programs, which I won't go into detail over. Those things get dropped in. There's some real excitement because normally you've got some pioneering teachers and the children are just grateful that they're getting a break from being in academic lessons. You know, they run around the playground for 15 minutes for 6 weeks and then boredom sets in because they realize actually they don't enjoy running that much. And then the interest tends to fall away. And that's, you know, that's one example. There's many other examples as well. What we're trying to do with schools is with that profiling exercise, we always use the phrase look up, because schools are really good at looking at the opportunity itself, but you need to look up to the policy. So if you want to change something in academic lessons, what's the policy that's going to dictate what happens there? Well, that's the teaching and learning policy. And there may be some others that sit around that. So how do you change that teaching and learning policy to integrate physical activity? You then come down to the next stage of the model, and it's, okay, we've got a physical and a social environment. Well, how can we address those two environments to support physical activity within academic lessons? And then what's the training that the different groups of staff within the school and beyond schools need to help to deliver that effectively? So that's working with the teachers and wider school staff. It's working with senior leaders on developing communities of practice around physical active learning. And then finally, you come down into the detail of what do we need to do in academic lessons to promote physical activity. And you know, there's lots of work around how we do that. That's not where CAS focuses. At that point, CAS is citing out to all the great research and practice that is already taking place in that area. So it's not trying to replace what is going on in countries. It's what it's trying to do is create that reflective practice against the different objectives that then provide that supporting system at the higher level that then supports the implementation and delivery on the ground. So in terms of how we sort of deliver that, and if we've got people sat here thinking, well, I haven't got access to this tool, well, first of all, get in touch. If you want to go in your own direction, again, absolutely fine. So the Creating Active Schools framework is there for anybody and everybody to use. What we do with our schools and how it all started was we printed off large copies of the framework in A0, so huge, great big posters. We got schools in a space, so we'd have 15 schools, but make sure you've got a senior leader and your kind of in-school, whole school physical activity lead. Get some post-it notes, so sticky notes, and say, right, we want you to write down all the things you do around physical activity in your school and stick them on the framework. And that's a really great exercise to do because it helps schools to understand where they've got lots of things going on, and it helps to identify where their gaps in provision are. And I will guarantee you the gaps in provision will be whole school practice and ethos, policy and vision generally, physical environments, social environments, and the stakeholders. Where schools will be doing lots of things is down in the 7 opportunity areas. And that's what we've seen in the UK. We've seen time after time after time after time that schools are great at putting things on, but because they haven't got that high level change, it doesn't sustain. How we've scaled that, so that's a kind of working at a one school level. How we scale that is the profiling tool or professional development tool that we have online. And that enables every school within the UK, hopefully we're building towards this point, to profile their own provision. We've also integrated 22 online CPD modules. So if a school comes through, goes through the tool, and the tool recommends that an area of high impact for them is measurement and evaluation, there's a 20-minute short-fire CPD module that talks to them about how they can integrate measurement and evaluation within the school setting. We, in terms of supporting that and building communities of practice, because what we've seen within Bradford, that has been really key, is we have locality leads. So at the moment, we're operating in 18 localities across England. So the national team, of which I'm a part, and we've got the Yorkshire Sport Foundation and the Bradford Institute for Health Research, work together. We develop a training program. We train the locality leads. Those locality leads then train and support their local schools and create a community of practice for those schools. And there's different communities of practice. So what we're seeing in Bradford is we have a community of practice around whole school approach. That's the entire project of CAS. And then what's been really interesting is schools coming together to collaborate around particular areas of the framework. So we might have a school that's pioneering. So St. James Academy in Bradford is a great example, really pioneering around outdoor learning. So they've become the champion for that as an area. And then other schools have joined that school and they're co-teaching each other on how this works within the school environment. And believe me when I say this, I have less power as a researcher to influence behavior change in teachers than another teacher. So my role is to set the scene, inspire everybody, and almost tell them why it's important. And then I step back into the shadows and I let the real experts who are already doing it in schools teach and support each other on how to make that possible. And that's the partnership working for me. We all need to become comfortable in our own roles. So I work very closely with school senior leaders. And you'll notice when I talk about school policy, I have a few examples. When it gets into a really in-depth discussion around school policy, I step back into the shadows and we put the senior leaders for schools up front because they know and understand those school policies. I can support the conversation around how we integrate physical activity, but I'm not an expert in that area and I never will be. I hand over that expertise to the people who do that on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's probably, you know, if there's any lesson I could pass on to anybody is become comfortable in your own clothes, you know, be confident in what you know, be comfortable with what you don't, and signpost to other people and work with other people to fill those gaps. And I think that's why creating active schools is gaining so much momentum, because we don't have any particular group of stakeholders stood at the front pretending they're the experts. Nobody's an expert, because if they were, we'd have solved this problem long, long time ago. I am definitely not an expert. I am somebody who is on a journey with lots of other people in trying to support children to be more physically active. And we are learning every step of the journey. And I think probably I'll finish here and then let you ask me if you've got any further questions. It is a journey. And I think people need to understand, people say to us, is it ready? Is creating active schools ready? And my advice is it's never ready. We are where we are. You know, we had 18 localities asking us for support and we had absolutely nothing. So we began with a community of practice. That community of practice came together to design and develop the professional development profile tool. That then led to the need for CPD. So we're all on a journey together. And actually what creating active schools looks like now will be very different in 5 years because of all the feedback that we get and schools telling us. So the next thing we're developing is case study examples. Well, how are other schools doing it? Okay, right, we'll pull some case study videos together to show you what other schools are doing. I imagine those case studies will look different again in 5 years' time. The profile tool might have to shift. And I think that's probably the greatest realization that we've all had, that we need to stop packaging these really nicely tight, you know, pieces of products and putting them on the shelf and holding them up as examples of good practice, because they probably were a year ago, but in 18 months' time, they'll be out of date. We continually need to evolve and learn. And it's this slow step change approach year on year with schools to help them provide more physical activity for their children and also their staff, because let's not forget, if the staff aren't active, the children aren't active, and we need to care about the staff. They are the engine of the school. They make the school work. And without looking after their health and well-being, we're not going to look after the health and well-being of children.
There was a lot in there for sure. I love the fact that it's all about youth and child education, but still infuse and instill in there. It's a lifelong learning journey, as you just mentioned. So it's very interesting. What you also said about we cannot brand it or market it as a ready-made solution, but it's something that is ongoing process. Well, it's sport anyway, so we need to move on, right?
Yes.
But definitely there's a lot. So we are almost heading to the end of this podcast. I do have still one or two more questions. One of them is, so it started in 2018 with this conference and where you brought these people together. I'm curious if you can paint, maybe for yourself, what has been the impact of this journey? And if you have one example of one school where you have seen really them taking the process, and it doesn't have to be long, but I think it's important to paint the reality of this journey and go behind the framework, but also what's happening in real life. So if you can share us few elements on it.
So what have I learned? I think I've probably said most of the messages I've learned, but to summarize them, we work in a messy world, and systems change, which whole school physical activity is a systems change project, is complex. And just get comfortable with the complexity and realize it's not difficult. And one day you might take two steps forward. The next day you might wake up and you've got an email from somebody and you've gone five steps backwards. The main thing is don't give up. Just keep moving forward in the right direction. You know, if we stop, we're never going to create change. But if we keep slowly treading forward, we'll start to see positive change. And quite often the next question is, and probably the thing I've learned is, well, where should we start? Should we work bottom up or top down? Both. You know, stop breaking up the system. You need to work in all parts of the system. So you should be trying to influence the policymakers at the same time with working with teachers and children within schools. Because actually, when you, and this brings me to your last point, when you get schools who are starting to implement a whole school physical activity approach, that becomes your evidence base that you can use with policymakers or funders to say, look, when we get this right, this is what it can look like and this is how it works. So we have a number of schools within Bradford, but also broadly in the national pilot that are really starting to shape into whole school physical activity and sort of very, very good provision. I hesitate to pick one because I think it's really unfair to the many that are doing a good job. I've mentioned a school earlier, so people can obviously have a look at what they do. But where it's working really, really well, senior leaders are bought in. 100% you need the buy-in of the senior leadership team. Whether that is as the main driver or that they are truly trusting their staff, their person they put in charge, and giving them license to go. The next is a culture of safety. So giving staff the opportunity to try things without fear of failure. And that is a huge thing within schools at the moment. If I don't deliver my maths lesson in the traditional way and I'm outside in a playground delivering it in an active way, and do you know what, it doesn't go very well, what's my head teacher and my other staff going to say to me? If they're supportive, they'll try again. If they're critical, they'll stop. So we need to make sure we've got that really supportive environment. And those schools that have that, and it generally, again, comes from the senior leader, that's where we're seeing positive change. The next things are around integration in policy, vision statements, but just schools that are willing to try things. So different schools take very different approaches. So I could sit here and describe a school that has what they call active enrichment on a Friday afternoon. So every class comes out of lesson and they do activities on a rotational basis, outdoor learning, archery, climbing, so on and so forth. That's a really great model and a good example of how they've implemented it. And they also have outdoor learning classes, enhanced physical education. You know, they've got bike tracks built in the school playground, you know, taking it to a really, really high level. But there's other schools who have focused on their active travel strategy and have got effective programs up and running, a really good policy behind active travel. So they're not just doing bikeability courses or, you know, trying to close school streets. They've got a policy that is or plan that has been designed and developed that pulls all these different elements together. So they've moved beyond the traditional, let's all walk to school this week. And they think, right, actually, what are all the different elements we need to knit together to make this look, to make this work? I think the final example is going back to the community of practice. So communities of practice within schools, so bringing teachers together to work on something, but then also schools supporting each other across the locality. If you can build those, and they exist for other subjects. You know, so we know that heads of maths will get together with other heads of maths across other schools and work together to improve the maths across their schools. Why do we not do the same for whole school physical activity and all the elements that sit within that? So those community of practice groups are essential to creating positive change.
Very impressive. A lot of knowledge to tap into and a lot of resources that you mentioned as well. So definitely, I am myself willing to dig further and I could spend much more time discussing. And it's a very hard exercise I'm putting on myself now, trying to kind of wrap up or take the essence of your message. But what I will get from it is actually your main message about all of us as actors in the system to get comfortable with the uncomfortable and flexibility and working together. That's one thing. And also somehow if I rephrase a bit, but feel free to tell me if I'm wrong when I say it. One of the key elements is working on power with, rather than power others and taking stakeholders together hand by hand. And when you mentioned the safety and supportive environment as a final message, actually, in my head, it loops back to what you were saying at the very beginning, that all type of stakeholders are needed, including parents and pupils. So in that sense, the supportive and safe environment are power with all of these stakeholders. So I just tried to wrap up, but feel free to tell me if that was a kind of summary.
Yeah. That's a very, very good summary. Definitely work with rather than do to. Just to touch on the parents part, it's really interesting. Parents need to be brought along in the journey. And quite often we forget the parents, and they can be a positive influence or they can be a negative influence. You know, some of the schools we've worked with, with physically active learning especially, parents have an understanding of what they think education should look like. And then if they hear their child is running around in the playground doing maths, they can be the first to be critical. So one of the things we suggest with our schools is parent newsletters, you know, but which generally tend to go out from schools anyway. But tell them what you're going to do and tell them what you're going to try. This kind of comes back from when I used to work with, I used to teach undergraduate students for a very, very long time. And I used to try and be pioneering in my modules and introduce new learning activities. And at the beginning, I would always say to students, look, I want to try this and it might not work, but I want you to stick with me, because if we don't try new things, we're always going to be doing the same old boring, sat down in a lecture theatre listening to what I'm doing. But do you know what? I'd like to get the 200 of you on your feet. We're going to use this as a kind of co-development, co-working space, flipping the classroom rather than you sitting listening to me lecture to you. Are you in? Do you want to have a go? And actually, if you're that open and honest, I think people normally come along on the journey with you. So I think for parents and everybody, just, you know, be open, tell them you're trying things. You want to improve the lives of their children and young people. And I think most people will buy in on that message.
That's a wonderful message. And before letting you go, I have a final, and I promise it's the last challenging question. You mentioned a few times that it's about accepting that you sometimes go one or two steps ahead and five steps behind afterwards. So if there is anything you would do differently, coming back to the creation of the framework, or if I reframe it, it's just, we have heard a lot of great and inspiring stuff and it seems like it's magically working. We all know that life is a bit different and you probably had some step back. So is there any advice you will share about a struggle you went through or the partnership went through while implementing the framework?
I think there's too many to list. This is not a magical solution that is working for every school. And, you know, please don't, if I've given this sort of view that this is creating amazing positive change in Bradford and across England, that's not the case. It's working for a large number of schools, and I think there'll be others that it's not working for. In terms of what have I learned in the journey and would I do anything different? It's a really good question. I'm not sure I would do anything different. I think we are heading in the right direction. You have to sometimes go down a dead end, you know, to learn that is a dead end, to change and do something differently. The only thing I think that would have improved this is if we'd had more capacity. So we constantly get feedback from schools all the time and localities in things they would like to see in the training, in the online system. We just need more people. We need more people to contribute to the design and development of things. And I think that's probably the only thing that I would change is investing more time to bring more resource, human resource in to help us develop the infrastructure. But we're all busy people. And I think when I do sort of keynote lectures, the way I generally tend to finish, and this is probably a great way to finish it, this is, I was in Zwolle at a conference and we walked past a dinosaur museum. And I got someone to take a picture of my head in the dinosaur's mouth. It was a Tyrannosaurus Rex. So normally I finish my presentations with, this all sounds really great, but most days I wake up and I feel as though I've got my head in a Tyrannosaurus Rex's mouth. And I think it's being comfortable with that constant frustration and celebrate success, embrace the frustration, and just keep making sure you move one step forward every time.
Thanks a lot, Andy. It's been a wonderful experience sharing this little time with you. I learned a lot, and I can promise you didn't make it sound like it's magic and everything works. It's me wanted to believe that we can do it all over, and we can inspire others. So thanks a lot for sharing all of it very honestly and transparently. It was really a pleasure. So I will end up just saying social change is a team sport. And it was, and so was this incredible experience. So I hope you will get more resource for the project. And there is still a lot of work that goes on behind the scene to bring an episode to here. So it's also my time right now and my responsibility to sincerely thank the whole crew who has been involved at ISCA. And for all of the listeners who don't know about ISCA, or in case you would like to stay up to date with our activity, we invite you to have a look at our website, where you actually will find all of the resources that Andy just mentioned, and to follow us on our social media. A final note, if you like that podcast, please help us spread the words. And if you don't like the podcast, but appreciate what Andy has been doing and is doing, you know you can reach out to him. So once again, thanks a lot for your time today, for listening to the episode. And Andy, it was a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Carol.